thank you for tuning in to a special edition of Talk of Southeast here on KCAW Raven Radio. We are joined today by Deanna Moore from Sitkins Against Family Violence, who is here today with a group of panelists to discuss the topic, consent, a new concept. Thank you all for being here, and I will now hand it over to Deanna, who will be moderating and introducing our panelists.
Good morning. I'm very excited to share this important conversation with you all today. My name is Deanna Moore. I've been working at SAFE as a victims advocate since 2013, and I've been living in Sitka since 1991. This hour is a part of SAFE's Crucial Conversation series. SAFE, Sitkins Against Family Violence, is a nonprofit organization that provides temporary shelter and empowerment-based safety and trauma-informed advocacy services for survivors of domestic and sexual violence while promoting a community of nonviolence and respect. We want to tell you that SAFE is located in the city and borough of Sitka, Alaska, and we also serve the surrounding areas of Southeast communities, including Port Alexander, Cake, and Angoon. The Crucial Conversation series began in 2015, initiated by the Domestic Violence Task Force. And we've continued the series to offer more than 13 forums to help educate the community on things related to the wider field surrounding intimate partner violence. All of our topics are chosen by the community, and we encourage the listeners to share ideas about future topics you would like to hear discussed. You can share those ideas with SAFE directly by calling 747-3370. Our topic this season is consent, a new concept, navigating consent as a parent or a caregiver. I have two guests joining me in the conversation today, and I am delighted to introduce them. We have Lauren Havens. Lauren is a parent of a young toddler and a youth educator passionate about teaching consent. She used to work at SAFE as the school program coordinator, where she managed prevention programs, including K-12 workshops on body autonomy, child abuse prevention, and consent. And she currently works for the Association of Alaska School Boards as the data and evaluation coordinator. Lauren, would you like to say good morning to the audience?
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Welcome. Glad you're with us. And we also have Peg Bloomer. Peg's been working with SAFE since 2001. Peg joined the Army at the age of 17. She was a paramedic in the 1990s, and she's raised two boys into men while she was living in Idaho and Eastern Oregon. And we are glad to have her at SAFE, and we are so glad to have her on the radio with this morning. Would you like to say hello to the audience?
Good morning.
Thank you. I'm so glad you're both here. And, you know, just to speak to this venue of Crucial Conversations, it really was started by members of the community who recognized there were topics the community wanted to learn more about, the community was talking more about. I've said before, and I'll say again before we're done today, that we really encourage you to share your ideas and your concerns and your interests with us at every opportunity that you get. So whether you give us a call, you know someone associated with SAFE, get online, find us through our websites and our Facebook pages, because we really want to guide these conversations to your interests. And today's conversation, talking about consent, particularly trying to navigate those conversations as a parent or a caregiver, I hope will translate to the rest of the community. You know, we all live and love and believe that it takes a village to raise our child, and our children are exposed to everyone in the community they cross paths with. So if this doesn't feel like a conversation that directly speaks to you because you aren't a parent or a direct caregiver, please appreciate that this could be of interest to you, and you could have a really meaningful and important impact as a support or a safe person for the children in your community. We're going to talk about this word consent, and the word consent is not new, and the definition has not changed, but the way we're talking about it today may be a little bit different. And I want to ask the guests here to help me talk about why we are discussing consent and in what context we're using it today for this conversation. Lauren, can you speak to that?
Sure. Thanks, Deanna. Yeah, I mean, consent is not a new word. It's been in the dictionary for a long time. But I think that there's been sort of an increased awareness of the importance of consent and the nuances of consent. And, you know, the fact, so when we talk about consent, we're really talking about sort of permission, right? Or permission. And when we usually use the word consent as sort of just a catch-all word, or, you know, we don't always clarify that we're talking really about, in many cases, sexuality or intimacy, touching each other's bodies, things like that are really important when we're talking about consent. And there's a lot of mixed messages out there for kids. There's a lot of things that make this confusing. And there's been a lot of, you know, high profile media cases that have come up where there's been some important conversations about things like, can you give consent if you're intoxicated, for example? And the nuances of that have changed a lot recently, or just over the past few years. I think it was, I don't know the exact year, but it was way more recent than you would think that the last state finally changed their laws so that a wife could not give consent to their husband. So it used to be that by being married, you were automatically just giving consent for any sexual activity, whether you wanted to at that point in time or not. And so that change has been pretty recent and pretty important as we think about what does it really mean to want to engage in this activity and to be giving your consent in a way that is true consent, not something that feels forced or coerced or manipulated or because of, you know, maybe norms or community sort of feeling like, oh, you should. So I think that's a little bit of the historic perspective. I'm not sure, Peg, if you have anything to add on that piece before we dig into maybe how we talk about that with kids.
I think that a lot has changed in my 60 years as far as consent goes. When I was a kid, there, you know, aside from my grandparents, there really wasn't any way for children to give consent or not consent. They were property and they did what they were told, and tragedies happened. And now we teach children, you know, my two sons are in their 40s. I was teaching them from the time they could understand about, I didn't call it consent. You know, it's your body, you have choices, and people have to respect your choices. Other people have choices, you have to respect them. You know, and I taught them it goes both ways, but I think it's more formalized now, more mainstream. So I think that's a good thing.
Thank you both. And I appreciate both of what you've had to share. I wonder if we can build on that a little bit. You know, when we're talking about sexuality or sex and more intimate relationships, to some of the listening audience, these may seem like adult concepts. These may seem like things that children will eventually have to grow up and deal with. But we want to talk about why it's important to begin teaching about consent to children, or to maybe children younger than we would have previously thought. So how can we build on this empowering children to know that they have choices and giving them the support to use the words to talk about what's coming up for them at a younger age than we may have thought in the past?
I'll go first. I think it's really critical to start teaching as young as possible that children have a choice, that it is in fact their body, that it is in fact their bubble of safety, because the more you grow up with something, the more natural it is. So by the time they're teenagers, it's not a thing anymore. It's natural. It's part of who they are that makes it stronger. People that are unsure and, well, I really don't want to, that's an opening for somebody to pressure them or to manipulate. So the earlier we start, the stronger that core value is in kids as they grow, and it just keeps them a lot safer.
Yeah, I think Peg has a good point. I mean, when we think about teaching consent, as you said earlier, you know, we don't necessarily use the word consent with young kids, right? It's about modeling, and it's about setting sort of family norms or family rules. And then helping our young kids that maybe don't have the words to model what that looks like to give or not give consent, right? So just like the example that's always used, but it's a great example, we do this with our one-year-old, you know, is always asking, you know, can I have a kiss? And if they don't want one, you know, you don't pressure that, you don't force them. You know, if auntie or grandma wants a kiss and you know, my son Arlo is running around and obviously doesn't want one, helping model, oh, Arlo doesn't want a kiss right now, or yeah, hug, or whatever it is. So that's one really easy way that you're teaching consent without using the word consent, you know, just helping to provide a voice, especially for someone who, you know, can't speak yet, like literally can't speak yet. but I think that changes as kids get older. And I think as we think about older kids and teenagers, that's when it gets really important, in my opinion, to start actually talking about specifics. And that can be really uncomfortable for parents, especially for parents who didn't grow up with those types of conversations in their home, right? And so thinking about how to share information with teenagers about sex when that is something that parents and kids don't talk about in sort of your own family can be really awkward, can be really overwhelming, can be something that, you know, makes you want to run and hide and go far away. And so that's another reason why it's so important to start early is, you know, a three-year-old is much less awkward and feeling uncomfortable than a teenager. So if you've set this kind of this family, I don't know, norm, I guess, of talking about these sort of serious things when they're young and they're just happy to talk to mom or dad or grandma or whoever is taking care of them, then by the time they're older and it's really important to start talking about specifics, then it, maybe there's some more of that built in where it feels like more of a normal conversation that they might have. So I'm not sure, Deanna, if you want me to go into any more specifics about some of those kind of conversations with older kids, since we've talked a lot about younger kids.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think I want to, I do want to go down that path, but I want to just pull back on some of what you've said. Maybe I'd just be reiterating it, or maybe you could help me expand on it a little bit. So we're talking about consent, and what I'm hearing you both describe is healthy boundaries. So I hear you using the example of, you know, does the baby want a kiss? The baby doesn't want a kiss, and we want to respect the baby's decision to not have a kiss. What the baby said no. So I think that I just want to just recognize that this stuff is all woven together. It sounds like when we're talking about consent, we're talking about healthy boundaries. And when we're talking about healthy boundaries, it's not just in related to something that may become a sexual relationship later on in life, but building on that from an early age. I would just, if we talk about more, I mentioned there are a lot of other examples besides the baby wanting or not wanting a kiss. You know, I think as I was looking into some articles about this, and even there were songs about this, don't touch my hair. There are people who are saying, you know, women of color who are speaking out, recognizing that, you know, their hair texture may be different than someone else's, and someone else may see that and think it's so interesting, I I'm going to cross your boundary to explore it and wanting to put that boundary up. So I have a friend who's pregnant, right? I've had other friends around me who are pregnant, and I'll tell you, I'm a mother. I've had three children. My hands just gravitate towards the magnet of a beautiful little baby growing inside that friend of mine. And I know from my experience, having been pregnant, that as much as I want to reach out and show my affection and I want to make that connection, touching that person's body without their permission can be really intrusive. So I'm digressing a little bit there, but I do think it sounds like we're saying that there are a lot of opportunities to teach healthy boundaries before we're even going to get to that conversation about providing consent in your intimate and sexual relationships. And so by the time we get to those perhaps more mature conversations with children who are a little bit older, we have a lot of opportunities to begin teaching kids, empowering kids, and role modeling for them how to navigate that relationship later on. Do either of you want to say anything about that or expand on what you've already said?
Yeah, I think those were some really great examples. It's about boundaries. And for me, I think sort of like between the young and the older teenagers, the two key pieces are, one, you know, promoting respect and boundaries and providing lots of opportunities for you to model respecting your child's boundaries and for your child to learn about how to respect other people's boundaries. Like even with us, you know, we talk about body language. So if my son wants to pet the cat, which the cats usually do not want to be pet, you know, we talk about, oh, look, like the kitty doesn't look very happy, you know, let's not, you know, so it's about teaching and also modeling. So being really careful to model listening to boundaries. But I think the other big piece is about reducing shame about the body, shame about these conversations, shame about puberty, shame about, you know, body, yeah, like I said, body parts. And so I think it's twofold. It's respecting and building that respect for boundaries. And then it's about having conversations and setting up sort of a family culture of reducing shame, of having your child be able to come talk to you about things, of having them set up to be able to have those conversations in their later intimate relationships. So they've grown up in a family where they can talk about these things, where they don't have shame about their body. So then when they have a partner, they aren't super, super awkward trying to navigate those conversations and feeling really uncomfortable, right? They know how to talk about it in a way that encourages sort of open conversation between them and their partner. So I think for me, those are like the two big things that are focused on. And respect really is just so important.
I think when you were talking to me about Dan, you were talking to me yesterday about the conversation you had with each of your sons about this and how, I forget which son, but they were talking to you about, it's not taught in school how to have that conversation. They go over, okay, this is consent, this isn't consent, this is respect, this is healthy boundaries, but they don't sit down and actually practice having those awkward conversations with their peers. And, you know, we as parents and people in general, people in the schools, it's all well and good for us to do everything we can from the earliest age on to but also I think we really need to encourage them to have conversations, and we should help them have those conversations and show them it's not embarrassing, because, you know, all of the education in the world isn't going to prepare you for the real world.
Thank you so much. Boy, I can just, we're only 10 minutes into this, and I feel like this is such a rich conversation. We could actually talk about this every day for a week and we wouldn't be done touching on all the points. So forgive me if I depart too much from our intention. you know, and as a parent, of course, that's the filter that I'm looking at the world through. You know, I think it, this conversation, so I did talk to some very close people to me in the last couple of weeks preparing for this. And one adult male friend of mine said he waited for this conversation from his parents. He waited for the good old birds and bees one. Like he was an adolescent. He'd heard that, you know, everybody's going to get this infamous talk and never got the talk. Waited for both of his parents, mother and father, who just never gave the talk. So whatever, he's an adult today and he's, you know, whatever, come to terms with his experience. But what I think of as a parent is I think about how important it is that I be comfortable in this conversation in order for me to even role model having this conversation with my children and without inadvertently sharing my discomfort, putting my discomfort on them. And so I really appreciate both of what you are sharing. And that just is kind of sitting in the forefront of me, is that it really requires me to get okay with this conversation. Maybe my children aren't the first people I need to practice having this conversation with. You know, maybe I need to rely on other people close to me and just practice using the words that the kids are going to use, not just the words that the kids are going to hear in the playground, but the ones that they're going to hear in conversation with each other, not just the ones they're going to see on TV, but the real life words that people are going to be used, whether we're using alternative words for body parts different from what's found in an anatomy book, or whether we're going to use the slang words that they're actually going to be encountering in these conversations with people who are closer to their own age. So, boy,
this... To go off at, you know, Deanna, yeah. It doesn't have to be perfect, right? Like, we don't have to be the perfect messenger. I think kids will appreciate the effort, and especially older teenagers appreciate honesty and seeing that there's somebody's trying to have this conversation. And often, you know, teens appreciate some vulnerability, right? Like, this is, you know, saying to your kid, you know, this is kind of awkward for me, you know, my mom or, you know, whoever didn't have this conversation with me, but I think it's really important. And so I'd like to have this conversation with you, even though it might make you uncomfortable to talk about this with me. And then also making sure that your kid has other resources and people who they can talk to. So, you know, not everyone wants to talk to their mom about sex. That's okay. That's fine. But starting the conversation and then encouraging your child to have other healthy and safe resources rather than learning about things through like porn or the internet or the media or TV shows that maybe don't show that healthy, helping them find the right ways or the right places to find more information. So, you know, whether that's encouraging them to talk to a beloved auntie or you know, go check out Safe's website, whatever that is, that we're, you know, I think families can start these conversations, but as Deanna said in the beginning, there's so many other healthy and important adult role models that kids might feel more comfortable talking to that maybe a better fit too, or an additional fit, somebody else in addition to the parents.
Thank you so much for talking about that. That just kind of reiterates what I'd said at the beginning of this program, that this conversation can be relevant for anyone who may be listening, because we never know when we are going to be that person who someone may be the person that child chooses to access. And that as long as we're providing safe space, maybe I don't need to get so tangled up on trying to create the perfect conversation or the perfect environment for having that conversation. In fact, we were talking about, Peg had mentioned that I'd discuss this with my sons. I won't share what any one of them said specifically. Not that any of them were, you know, holding back for me. I'm not sure that they would care, but they made it really clear, at least one or two of them. There was one of them made a reference like, you know, once you untie the boat, once you all tie something, some reference to like, once you untie the boat, everything's safe. And he was talking about going out boating with his dad and that was their safe place. And when I talked to his dad about it, and I wanted to pay him a compliment. He said, gee, Deanna, you know, I can't tell you how many times we're sitting by a fire. And he said, every single conversation starts like this. You know, I was thinking. And then it would be this something really important to my son, something really, all three of my sons probably, but all these conversations would be sitting beside a fire. And maybe there's something about being in a safe environment with no walls, a flame to put your eyes on and kind of let that conversation flow. And so I don't mean that that's the perfect setting for anyone. But what I mean by that is it was meaningful to me to appreciate that they'd had those opportunities to have some of those conversations and that it isn't going to be something any of us can really orchestrate, but providing those safe spaces and safe company is sometimes almost enough to get the ball rolling. And as providers, we can hopefully make sure that our children have those opportunities.
I think that does bring up a couple practical things though, Deanna. I think it's very true though, that having these sort of conversations in a way that there isn't really intense eye contact. So sitting side by side, as opposed to sitting across from each other, that feeling of privacy. So being out on a boat where there aren't people that are going to overhear, you know, mom's not going to walk in at any minute when you're trying to talk to your dad about something, right? Like what you just said, looking at a fire, or being out on a boat, staring out at the ocean, going on a walk. Those are all great, like amazing, practical, like best practices for having these types of hard conversations with young people, or just having that space to have those for them to bring up the conversation. So if anyone's listening, looking for some practical tips to have these types of conversations, those are some of the really great ways that you can kind of encourage these types of conversations. Driving in the car is another great one, like on the way home from school or something, as you're sitting side by side, not having to look at each other. There's plenty to look at outside the window, plenty to distract, right? And maybe this would be a good time for a break for some music.
Yeah.
I have a voice, started out as a whisper, turned into a scream, made a beautiful noise, shoulder to shoulder marching in the street. When you're all alone, it's a quiet break, but when you band together, it's a choir of thunder and rain. Now we have a choice, 'cause I have a voice.
I'm not living to die, don't stand in a wasteland, look me in the eye, stop living a lie, and stand up next to me. You gotta put one foot in front of the other, with a hand in a hand, holding on to each other. Go on and rejoice, 'cause you have a voice.
It is loud, it is clear, you're stronger. Sister to the violence of my brother, we can rage against the river, feel the pain of another. I have a voice, I have a voice, and I let it speak for the ones who aren't yet really free. It's killing me, no one is saying what we need to hear. I will not let silence win. Now when I see all the pain, there's no other choice, 'cause I have a voice.
It is loud, it is clear, it is stronger than your fear. It's believing you belong, it's for calling out the wrong. From the mouths of our mothers to the lips of our daughters, we can dream like our brothers, speaking loud like our fathers.
Started out as a whisper, turned into a scream, made a beautiful noise, shoulder to shoulder marching in the street. When you're all alone,
it's a quiet break, but when we stand together, it's a choir of thunder and rain. Now we have a choice, 'cause I have a voice.
Now we have a choice, 'cause I have a voice.
Now we have a choice, 'cause I have a voice.
We're back. I hope you enjoyed the song. And just to remind the audience, and this is Deanna Moore. I'm sitting with Peg Bloomer and Lauren Havens. We're having a conversation with each other today that I hope interests the audience, and hope you'll find ways to engage in this conversation in the future too. We're talking about consent, a new concept, navigating consent as a parent or a caregiver. We've just spent the first half of this program talking about consent, what it means specifically in intimate relationships, specifically around sexuality, and talked about some of those healthy boundaries and skills that we can teach young children as we sort of equip them to develop into adolescent years where they may be engaged in more mature relationships, where this idea of consent becomes very applicable to how they are going to have intimate relationships, sexual relationships, keeping themselves safe and keeping each other safe. And I wonder if we can talk a little bit, and maybe you two can educate the listeners and myself, about at what age, generally speaking, what age is it safe or reasonable and practical to have a conversation that includes using the word sex, with the understanding that that might be something children are either encountering or going to be encountering soon? Do you want to say something about that, Peg?
Yeah. Apparently, I did things a little differently. I was a paramedic at the time, and I had all of these anatomy books and DVDs and, well, back then it was VHS. And my oldest was 11. My youngest was 10. I sat him down. I took him through the entire anatomy of males and females and let them know that whatever their choice was, this is what the anatomy was. And these were the precautions to take. I was very clinical and very matter of fact, and I wanted to get to them before puberty, so that they, because we went through the whole puberty thing too. And so, and I was always really honest with my kids. They could come ask me anything. The most shocking things came out of their mouths. And I would always say, okay, well, this is what it is, or I will find you the answer. So when it did come time, I took them condom shopping, for heaven's sakes, you know, explaining all the differences. And I just made it really kind of, okay, this is how you go shoe shopping. And they always took it really well, and they were very matter of fact back. So I don't know if that works for everybody, but it worked for us.
Yeah, I think that sounds amazing, Peg. That one thing that I saw recently, a sort of framework to think about, was start with mechanics, not the relational aspect. And then later it goes into thinking about it in terms of actually your child doing this with other people. So what do I mean by that? Before puberty, just as you did, Peg, you know, really focusing on age-appropriate mechanics. So even younger than, you know, 10 or 11, just always using body, you know, medically or anatomically accurate body part names, you know, incur if your child is touching their private parts, you know, not shaming that sort of behavior, talking about, you know, if they're doing something in public that's maybe not appropriate, not shaming them, but saying, oh, that's something that we do in private at home, right? So those sort of things are all the precursors. I think that's exactly how I would do it. And I think that's what a lot of the evidence shows, is that sort of prior to puberty, there's like multiple conversations that are really more focused on sort of the mechanics The sort of very straightforward, very sort of like, you know, this is what happens. And then as children, and that the next kind of step of the conversation, I think, to answer your question, Deanna, is really dependent on your kid and where they're at. You know, if you have a 14-year-old that's really interested in dating and maybe is watching TV shows that involve a lot of sex or a lot of romance, or, you know, then maybe that conversation happens at 14. But if you have a 14-year-old who is totally not at all, you know, interested or, you know, having these type of conversations, then maybe you wait till they're 15, right? So that's one of those ones where you're really responding to the needs and the conversations of your child. But I think that's the point where then it's like, okay, well, remember how we talked about sex and remember how, you know, we've always, you know, talked about this stuff. I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about maybe love or about relationships, about intimacy. You know, there's this other piece to it that involves, you know, being really excited about someone and, you know, wanting to be intimate with them. And one thing I want to talk to you about is the importance of consent. And so that conversation kind of building on previous conversations that happened that were more on the mechanics, but building in sort of that relational piece. I found that to be a helpful way of thinking about it. And for me, I think those conversations with older kids really are focused to start on the positives and not like, especially we're all parents, we're all moms of boys here who are getting these messages from the media about sexual assault, about consent. And I think oftentimes, you know, I'm guilty of it myself, sometimes villainize men and boys, right? And make them feel like they're set up to do things wrong or bad. And so really starting from a place of positivity and love and appreciation, and also appreciation and positivity about sex, about intimacy, about kissing. And so while it's important to teach kids specifics about what consent means, you know, it needs to be verbal, it needs to be clear, it needs to be active, not manipulated, not sort of coerced. Is it really consent if you ask someone 20 times and they say no for 19 times and they finally say yes the 20th time? No, that's not really consent, right? Is it consent if someone is super intoxicated and they can't really, like they're not really coherent and able to make a decision? No, that's not really consent, right? So it's important to discuss all of those specifics. But I think first, it's most important to set a tone of, you know, when you're going to engage in sort of intimacy, and you would use different words with your kid, depending on what you use in your household, right? I'm using sort of clinical words because we're on the radio. But when you're going to do these things, it's really important that you are thinking about the other person, right? You're not kissing someone because you don't want them to have a good time, right? And so thinking about ways of setting up this conversation as, oh, that's so exciting, you have a crush, and I, you know, like, I'm stumbling over my words here, but making sure that this doesn't feel like a conversation that's like, you better not, you know, sexually assault anyone. Like, I want to make sure that you're not doing anything bad, and more of like, here's all these great things that will happen in your life. And as you're doing these things, here's some ways to make sure that you, are being respectful and considerate and kind and, you know, thoughtful of these, of the people that you are participating in intimacy with, obviously with better words than those. So anyway, I just think that, especially when we're talking to young boys, but girls as well, sometimes we just get into such like a shameful or such a, like trying to prevent bad things from happening, that we miss an opportunity to set up some like real positive and exciting and, yeah, positive feelings about intimacy and relationships. And I also, sorry, I've gone on for a while, but I also think that these conversations can be had not just focused on one thing. So it can also, it's also really helpful to pull in other pieces of relationships other than just sex or other than just making out or whatever it is that your kid is doing. So sex does not usually, sometimes, you know, people are doing stuff without a relationship, but for most kids, especially teens, you know, they're doing stuff with kids who they like, they have a crush on, they want to go on a date with them. And so there's an opportunity to talk about all of the other stuff that goes into relationships and not just focus on sex, right? Kids want to, this is their first, maybe the first time they're going on a date. There's so much to learn that's just beyond the intimate piece, right? They, if they've never been on a date, there's so much to learn about, you know, maybe going to a restaurant or how to have conversations or what questions to ask their date, or there's so much else that goes on in relationships besides sex that that can be part of this conversation to make it feel less awkward.
Yeah, interesting. Thank you so much. So a couple things that you were sharing about there that I was kind of reminded of. And so I'm kind of working backwards in my thoughts here because I think it was my most recent thought that's going to come out first. One of the things I, and you've, the audience has heard me say now that I spoke to my kids, all three of my kids, about this conversation. So one of the things I want to just throw out there, make sure I'm advocating for their concerns. One of them said that they didn't know, they needed to know how to have a conversation about sex with someone without making it unromantic or taking away the passion. And I think this is a conversation that my generation had about condoms. You know, how do you open up a condom and have a condom, you know, play a role in that decision without suddenly taking what might be a romantic or a passionate or a sexy moment and ruining it. And so I think that's what my child was saying, was that, you know, how do you just have this conversation without ruining it? Like, hold on, we have to stop. Let's make this clear, because, you know, like you said, we don't want it to be too clinical. We don't want to talk to them in a way that's too clinical, because that's not going to give them words that are really going to be practical for them to use. And so I just wanted to make that point. And one thing you touched on there, Lauren, and I hope this is clear for the audience and certainly for everybody the audience knows. One of my children said the message he had received is that, yes, I'd asked him, you know, you went to the school district and, you know, do you remember this conversation coming up? Or do you remember anybody talking to you about it? And he kind of quoted, he says, yes is yes and no is no. And if she's drunk, the answer is no, no matter what she said. And I think that that is pretty practical. I was not unimpressed that if that was the only piece of, and we did have other parts of this conversation, but that was one sort of mantra that he took out of the message he had received in school. And it made sense to him and it was practical. It wasn't something he was going to negotiate or wanted, a point he wanted to argue. And so,
another favorite one of mine, Deanna, is the answer shouldn't just be yes. It should be heck yes. Or, you know, it's like, it's not enough to just say yes, but it's like an active wanting yes, right? And if there's any hesitation or unsureness or coercion or please, please, then the answer is not really yes. It's not a heck yes, I'm in, right? Sorry to interrupt. You can continue. I just think both of those together are a really good kind of picture of what consent looks like and for practical in practical ways for a young person.
Good. Thank you. Another thing too, boy, Lauren, you just gave so much food for thought there. I think I could think through this conversation and come back to a few of the things, but one of the other things that I wanted to put out there was that I was kind of given the warning by one of my children, you're not talking about this early enough. You're not talking about this early enough. And so I do hope that we are raising children who are going to have healthy mutual relationships, you know, healthy sex lives, healthy intimacy, healthy whatever in the future. But for those of us parents who may not be, or for those parents who may not be so aware of what their children, you know, how their children is behaving or how that their children are thinking and feeling. It's nice to be able to teach them and enjoy supporting them as they navigate relationships throughout the years. But there may be children who are engaging in behaviors that we aren't aware of. And so how do we, you know, or can we talk a little bit about how to make sure we're getting some underlying messages out there, whether they're woven into these broader conversations? You know, maybe there's no answer for that, but I just kind of want to acknowledge that I have heard of children having intimate relationships at ages even pre-puberty. It's almost confusing, and I feel like I age myself. I feel like a young woman, but I am not unsurprised sometimes when I hear about how young and how unintimate some of those encounters can be when they're, I don't know what, learned off the internet or happened at a party. I don't know what, in what context that happens. Peg, I saw you were going to make a comment.
Just a couple of things came to mind. I did talk to my sons from the time they were like brand new, about, you know, you ask the question one time and you get the answer and that's it. That's the end of it. If I say yes, that's the end of it. If I say no, that's the end of it. You know, you don't get to do the kid thing of asking 3 million times. You're asked and answered, we're done. And also, it was really important to me when I was raising my sons that they not just be aware of their own right to consent or not consent, but they were aware of people around them who might not be as strong. And not just the girls, but some of the boys were not real strong people. You know, they were picked on, they were bullied. And I made sure my kids were not the bullies. They were the ones that would step in front of the bully and say, okay, that's enough, you know. And they got into trouble a few times, but I was pretty proud of the fact that they would, you know, hey, he said stop, you got to stop. Or she said no, so leave her alone. And I think it's important that we really stress to our kids, we're not teaching you this just for you. We're teaching you this for everybody in your circle. If you see somebody being pressured, step in or get help.
Yeah, I think that's all so important, Peg, and teaching kindness. And I think it comes back to empathy and kindness, seeing other kids as just as important and whole humans with thoughts and desires and boundaries, you know, as ourselves. To go back to the original question, Deanna, I know there's probably some listeners here who are like, my kids better not be having sex in high school, and I'm not going to talk to them because I don't want them to. And that, you know, that's totally valid. I think we all have different values and all have different ideas about when is an appropriate time to begin, you know, sex or sexual activity, whether that's kissing or making out. So I think to those parents, I would say, you know your kid, but also it may be happening and you're unaware. And so that's why it's so important to start these conversations long before you believe your child is engaging in sexual activity, and to build family norms around openness. And even if you really don't want your kid having sex in high school, for example, making sure that you set up ways that your kid can talk to you about it if they choose, or if they're wavering and they think that they might want to have sex. And if you believe that that doesn't, you know, align with your personal family values and you want to talk to them about it, that you have ways to have that conversation with them that's listening to them, that's not minimizing the reasons why they want to have sex, that's not shaming them, but like setting up the ability to have these conversations, I think will only help you in whatever it is that you believe is important for your family, right? And we all have different values, but I think kids are probably going to have sex earlier than we want, or maybe think they will be. So that's one piece. And then one thing I just wanted to touch on too was the importance of messaging in the media. And so especially if you don't really know what's going on with your kid, you're not really sure if they're maybe having sex or going on dates, watching TV together and just having a conversation about what other people are doing can be a really helpful way to kind of get some insight into what your kid is doing, right? So sometimes they don't want to share about what's going on in their life, but if you're like, oh man, I can't believe this character did this, or oh, I can't believe this, or what did you think when this happened, or how would you have responded? Those are some ways to kind of start getting at these conversations without having to make it a big deal. And then, oh, I had one last thing, but now I'm not remembering it. So I'll hand it back to you, Deanna, for a minute.
Peg, in case Lauren gets back to that, is there anything, because we are really almost out of time here, is there any last thoughts or messages you would want to get out to the listening audience?
I think the biggest thing for me is consent is every aspect of life, not just the autonomy over your own body. And I think we need to teach kids that. We need to live it ourselves, and we need to teach our kids that it's not just about sex. It's about respecting people's boundaries and respecting people.
Yeah, respect, kindness, and empathy. I think these are things that we want our children to have as adults, you know, characteristics, regardless of whether that applies to sex or the rest of their life. I think, I think hopefully all of us as parents, you know, want our children to have healthy, safe, intimate relationships, whether that be, you know, a lifelong marriage or people they date or whatever it is. You know, I think there's some joy in relationships, of course. And so, I think consent is one piece of that, and it's an important piece because it's something, you know, that can, without consent, there can be some real damage done. And so that's why it's so important to talk about specifically. And so it helps keep our kids safe, and it helps keep other kids safe to be able to have these conversations in a way that's empowering and practical for them.
Thank you so much. Just to close things up here, I want to say that this is a dynamic conversation. Let's not stop talking about it. I encourage you to have these conversations with people you know, share your ideas, talk about your challenges, forgive yourself for making mistakes, and access all the resources that are available. If you go to our website at safe.org, safv.org, we have a resource tab where you'll find a number of topics, including the topic of consent. We've added some additional information, a couple of sweet little videos, and the library gave us a bibliography of all the books they have on this topic. They've got some great literature down there. So let's not end this conversation entirely. Let's make sure that we're keeping safe space for each other as adults, as parents, as caregivers, as community members. If we're not comfortable, then how can we help support them? So let's look forward to our next crucial conversation, but please also explore those resources. Thank you, Peg. Thank you, Lauren. Thank you for Brian keeping us all together there. We really appreciate being on the air this morning. I think it's a good time to say goodbye.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.